So it just so happens that his mother teaches in the same school that his children attend, and she's a preschool teacher. So after he went to see his children's teachers, so he stopped by to say hello to his mother, and then when he was leaving, he gave her a kiss, and then walks out. So one of his friends, who knows him, but doesn't know his mother, comes over to him and says, what, are you crazy? What are you doing here? You're walking over and you're kissing up the one of the women teachers. So a person has to be sensitive, not only of that the substance of what we're doing is right, but also of the appearance which is given off. Now exactly who are we concerned with? What audience are we concerned with? In again, making sure that our behavior is not only actually correct, but also appears correct as well. So are we concerned just with other Jews? Are we concerned with Gentiles? Exactly with whom are we concerned? Who's our audience? Who's our constituency? So the truth is, at first glance, you seem to get mixed signals from halacha. On the one hand, the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us there's a din. Let's say a Jew is being coerced in public to violate one of the mitzvot ha'Torah. A gun is put to his head in Stalinist Russia. A gun is put to his head and he's told that he has to eat chazit, he has to eat pork. Otherwise he's going to be killed. And the only reason he's being coerced is because they want him to violate the Torah. They want him to violate his religion. So the halacha is that if that's the intention, so then if it's in public, if it's b'fahesya, so even if it's not one of the big three of Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shvichus Damim, even if it's not murder or idolatry or adultery, incest, so he has to surrender his life. What's the definition of farhesia in this context? 10 Jews. 10 Jews. But it has to be a minion of Jews. So in this context, and if he doesn't, if he succumbs to that coercion and he eats the pork in public, that's a chil Hashem, the Gemara says. But in this context, the Gemara says the audience is an audience of Jews. On the other hand, if you learn Sefer Yirmiyahu, so in Sefer Yirmiyahu, so the Navi Yirmiyahu speaking in the voice of Hashem, says how Hashem complains, as it were, Al Shmi Hamechulal Bagoyim, that my name, which is desecrated amongst the nations of the earth. Clearly, the Chil Hashem there, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is decrying, is not a Chil Hashem which played itself out only in the presence of Jews, but it's a Chil Hashem in the presence of non-Jews as well. So how do we sort of, how do we reconcile, how do we integrate? So apparently the pshat is as follows. When we're dealing with behavior which has to do with ethics, which has to do with morality, behavior that either is or can appear to be unethical, immoral, behavior where there are universal values involved, so then a Chil Hashem can be created in the eyes of non-Jews as well, and we have to be sensitive to that. When we're dealing with impressions, again, or realities, not ethical or moral behavior, we wouldn't describe eating something which is not kosher as unethical, as immoral. That's cheating, stealing, lying. We would describe that, no, that's an avera, that's agzeres hakosher. So in that area, so then a Gentile sees that he's not gonna think any less of the Jew for succumbing. So there, that type of Chil Hashem, the Chil Hashem, again, not of universal mitzvahs, but of the particular mitzvahs which are particular to Klal Yisrael. So then there, the audience is only a Jewish audience. In some cases, you actually have examples. There are a few such examples. If you ask Talmidei Chacham with Bekiyas, they'll rattle off probably many examples. But I'll just give you one example. There are some cases where the post can actually say that because of comparisons that non-Jews will draw, we have to be machmir on something, we have to be stringent on something that otherwise we could have been lenient on. Example. What type of example are we talking about? So according to some opinions, me'ikar hadin, it would really be mutter. Let's say a community is building a shul, and they're not paying the contractor per day, per hour. They're paying him for the whole job. They arrange with him, he's gonna build the shul, it's gonna cost $500,000. They're not paying him per day, per hour. So whichever days he chooses to work, it's not because I'm telling him, you work today. The community is telling him, you work today, and we'll pay you. It's because we told them, listen, get it built, and we'll pay you this for the whole job. So according to some opinions, so me'ikar hadin, if that were happening, the shul could be built on Shabbos. Because he's not building it on Shabbos because we told him to work on Shabbos. We don't tell him when to work because we're not paying him per day. We're not paying him per week. We're paying him for the job as a whole. If he wants to work four days a week and it'll take a few extra months, so we're not telling him when to work. According to some opinions, we don't ever really do this. According to some opinions, me'ikar hadin will be mutter. The Mishnah Berurah quotes that the post can say that one of the reasons we don't do it is because, at least in their day, the Gentile nations amongst whom we live, they don't allow malacha to be done on their holy days. So what will it seem like? It will create a chilul Hashem if they see that we allow malacha on our holy day, on Shabbos. There are such examples, again, where the impression that it's going to make, the impression that's going to be conveyed, actually impacts the halacha v'chumra. Actually impacts the halacha v'chumra. There are other examples we could go to in Hukos Avedus with this consideration is relevant also. Sometimes we find ourselves in settings where we're alongside non-Jews, but we don't necessarily think of it. For instance, let's say in a Jewish school, but there are non-Jewish teachers. So we have a sense of very much being at home. It's a Jewish school, so we feel very much at home. We don't think of it as necessarily as a mixed setting. But if there are non-Jewish teachers and or administrators in the school, then it very much is a mixed setting. So that sensitivity, again, to Al Shmi HaMechulal Vagoyim is one that we have to really, really try to maintain in that kind of setting. And even the what perhaps would be the normal type of fooling around or whatever, but one has to be mindful of the impression that it's going to make on non-Jews. Now, all of this sensitivity notwithstanding, the Ramah, the beginning of Shulchan Aruch, tells us something very, very important. The Ramah writes that al yevosh the pnei b'nei adam hamal igin olav ba'avodaso yizbach. A person should never be inhibited in avodas Hashem, in fulfilling Torah mitzvahs, because there are people who mock him, who scoff at what he's doing. Well, in other words, as much sensitivity as we're supposed to have to what other people, Jews and non-Jews, think, that's only a sensitivity to if they'll suspect us of doing something which really, by the Torah standards, is wrong. They'll suspect Rav of not paying the butcher for the meat because they saw him walk into the store and walk out without paying any money. So there they're suspecting him of something which actually is wrong. But let's say it's just because the negativity is not because of anything which is actually wrong, but the negativity is because of their lack of appreciation or lack of understanding or cynicism about the Torah. So that's where the Ramah writes, it's in the very, very first sentence of Shulchan Aruch, that's where the Ramah writes that there we're not supposed to be at all inhibited because of people's negative impressions. So we're supposed to be sensitive, again, to a negative impression if it's an impression that we're doing something which is really wrong. But if it's a negative impression because of their lack of understanding, appreciation, or respect for what the Torah tells us that we're supposed to be doing, examples of that, Rebosa? Any real-to-life examples, scenarios, or something like that?
Happening in an airport.
It's happening in an airport. It can be a yarmulke. Right? So many. It can be. Again, whether the setting is school or whether the setting is the workplace. Let's say there are people who are sitting around and talking, and the talk is not really appropriate. Maybe it's lashon hara. Maybe it's very crude. So a person has nothing to do with it. So because of that, I don't know, maybe a person looks antisocial, maybe he looks prudish, I don't know what he looks, but he can certainly get vibes that people don't think much of him because of his behavior. So if you take a look, that's another example again of what we're talking about. Take a look at Chafetz Chaim quotes, the Mishnah. Quotes it on more than one occasion, Perkei Avos, that it's about such situations, here we're not supposed to be concerned with what people think. And the Mishnah says, better that a person should appear to be a shota in the eyes of others, better that he should appear to be someone who's deranged, someone who's out of touch with reality, than he should actually be a rasha in the eyes of Hashem. Better that the whole world should think that we're shelter, that we're out of touch with reality, than that Hashem should think that we're acting in a wicked way. Okay. What about, is there a mitzvah? So far we've been talking more about avoiding, right? The Yisam Nikiyim, Maris Ayin, avoiding giving off wrong, misleading, erroneous impressions. What about, is there a mitzvah to impress positively and to impact others? Again, so I think the title that was given to our discussion tonight features the phrase from Yeshayahu of Or LaGoyim, that the Klal Yisrael is supposed to function as a light unto the nations. Chazal, in two places, in the Gemara Yuma and the Sifri, darshan from the pasuk of Ahavtas Hashem Elokecha, Sheyehei Shem Shamayim Es Ahev Al Yodcha. The pasuk says you should love Hashem, and Chazal associate with that pasuk that not only is that pasuk telling each of us that you should love Hashem, but that pasuk is also telling each of us that you should bring others to love Hashem as well. Sheyehei Shem Shamayim Es Ahev Al Yodcha. So how is that done? How is that accomplished? So we're supposed to impress and impact. Not only are we supposed to avoid giving off the wrong impression, not only are we supposed to avoid our behavior being a turnoff, but we're supposed to positively impress and impact. How does that happen? So if you read carefully, you'll see that the Sifri, which the Rambam elaborates, develops it in one way. The Gemara in Yuma develops it in a different, there's no dispute, but in a different way. So the Rambam in Sefer Mitzvahs quotes the Sifri as follows. Ahaveihu al kol habriyos. Make Hashem beloved to everyone. Ki'inyan shenema, as the Torah tells us about Avraham Avinu, as ha-nefesh ha-sha'osu b'chalem. Right, the souls that Avraham Avinu and Sarah Imenu created in Choron. What does that mean? So the Rambam says, elaborating the Sifri, that Avraham Avinu dorash anoshim el ha-emuna. He called. Right? He beckoned people. The mitzvah the Rambam says is nidrosh v'nikra ha-anoshim la-avodasa. We should call people to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Or in other words, to teach. The teaching doesn't necessarily have to be in a formal context. It doesn't have to be in a classroom. It can be in an informal venue as well. It can be a person sitting with a chavrusa. It can be at the dinner table. It can be in a conversation on a tiyul, at recess, in any setting. But one way that we look to impress and to impact is through teaching, again, whether formally or informally. But the Gemara in Yuma, listen, I'm going to read you a couple of lines. It's a very important and Gemara presents it a little bit differently. Kedisanya, the Brisa teaches us, Vahavtas Hashem Lekecha, you should love Hashem your God. Again, that Hashem should become beloved because of you. A person should learn a lot of Torah and really understand it well. And then, all his dealings, business or otherwise, should be done with complete integrity. And when he speaks with people, always softly, in a refined way. When a person conducts himself that way, learns Torah, fills himself up with Torah, and then is a person of uncompromising integrity. He stands by his word. Everything is straight. No quinsin, no tricks, nothing under the table, no, I'll pay you cash and don't charge me sales tax, or pay me in tax and I won't charge you sales tax. No games, everything straight, flat. Speaks in a soft, refined way in dealing with people. Mahabios, almost a little. So what do people say about that person? Ashrei Oviv Shalimdo Torah, Ashrei Rabo Shalimdo Torah, right? Fortunate or praiseworthy is his father, is his Rebbe who taught him Torah. Oy Lahem Labrios, woe to those Shalolamdu Torah, because Ploni Shalom Torah, so and so who learned Torah, Re'u Kama Noyim Maaso, Re'u Kama Mesukonim Maaso. See how beautiful and how refined and how genuine all his actions are. So over in the Gemara in Yuma, so what has the impact? Because we get up on a soapbox and teach and preach. In the Gemara in Yuma, so what is it that impresses and impacts? What do you say, Ramasa? Just a person's behavior. If a person, through his Talmud Torah and Shmiras HaMitzvahs, through learning Torah and observing Torah, embodies Torah, so Torah is inherently impressive. Torah is inherently attractive. Torah is inherently beautiful. And what the Gemara in Yuma says is, you don't even have to teach. All you have to do is be a Torah Dicky Jew, and that has makes a tremendous lasting impression and impact upon people. I want to tell you quickly story, maybe two stories. My father, the father of Vacha, was a professor at Harvard. That was his job. A lot of non-Jews at Harvard. That was the professional setting in which he worked. And what's more, not only was he outwardly very, very Jewish in terms of dress, in terms of appearance, he was also a professor of Jewish studies. And what's more, that there used to be every so often, once a month or something, the department of which he was a member, Near Eastern Languages and Civilizations, there used to be departmental meetings. So either just as a member of the department he attended, or that was a rotation in terms of serving as chairman of the department. So when it was his turn, he took his turn as well as chairman. But in the winter time, so in Shkia in Boston is even earlier than for those of you who have a New York orientation. But in Boston, Shkia gets as early as 4:13 in December. We get around December 21st, so Shkia is as early as 4:13. So he always used to excuse himself from the meeting, not only to go out and daven biyichidus before sunset, no, to go back from Cambridge. To go back to Brookline, to where first it was his father's shtiebel, then it was his shtiebel was, because he had to go back and for tefillah b'tzibur. What did his non-Jewish colleagues think about this? I don't think they could begin to understand what it's all about. You can't pray over here. You can only pray over there. You need another 9 people to pray with. What's it all about? And I don't know whether they had any understanding whatsoever, but to a man, he commanded universal respect. Every single person he came in contact with saw the integrity, saw the consistency, saw how he was himself in all settings, and it commanded respect. Now I'll tell you a much more a one-time event, a more dramatic story. The story was I heard the story from the Baron Soloveitchik's account. Stories about his father. His father, the Baron, was the Rav's younger brother. So his father was Rav in different communities in Russia. And was still a Rav at the time of the Russian Revolution. In the Russian Revolution, so it became increasingly dangerous for all Jews, and especially Rabbonim, because the communist authorities, you cut off the head so that the body dies. So they used to target the Rabbonim. Okay, that's sort of the background to the story. Vayihi Hayom, day comes, and a Jew and a non-Jew come to the Moshe Soloveitchik, to the Rav and Aaron's father. There's a dispute between them. And he had such a reputation for honesty that the non-Jew agreed to come to the Moshe Soloveitchik to have the dispute adjudicated. And the non-Jew was accusing the Jew of cheating him. That he had paid, I don't remember these details exactly, but I think it was that he had paid him and then the Jew hadn't delivered on the merchandise. And that the Jew was cheating him. And the Jew denies it. Then at one point, The Jewish litigant leans over and says in Yiddish, which obviously the Russian peasant, the farmer, didn't understand. So he leans over to Rav Moshe Soloveitchik and says, Rebbe, mach mit dem Abshara. We've got to compromise with him. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik understood that what the Jew was saying is, yeah, I ripped him off. So let's work out a pshara. Give him, make me pay him a certain amount, and I'll walk away with the rest of my pocket. See, he understood. He read between the lines, between the words, of what the Jew said. And he stood up. But Dayanim generally sit during a din Torah. He stood up and began screaming at the Jew and said, "You pay him back every kopeck this second." And the Jew was so terrified. And Kacha, he did. So that seemed to be the end of the story. Seemed to be the end of the story. The Moshe forgot about the story. Seemed to be the end of the story. One day, he gets a knock on the door. Who is it? It's this Russian who had a Gentile, who had been involved in the dispute with the Jew. That Rav Moshe had the Rav Moshe Soloveitchik had adjudicated, and he tells him either he was involved with the communist police at that point, or he had a friend who was. He said, "Your name is on a list. We're coming to arrest you soon." And based on that information, so Rav Moshe Soloveitchik and his family knew to sneak across the border and avoid arrest. That's not why a person acts with integrity, but it shows. We don't have to do anything extra. All we have to do is what the Torah tells us is right, and that makes such a profound impression upon Jews and non-Jews alike. We don't have to look for gimmicks. All we have to do is what the Torah tells us is right. The Torah tells us you got to be straight, you got to be honest. You can't cheat. You can't cheat a Jew or a non-Jew. And you have to stand and you have to have that integrity and that consistency throughout all areas of Torah. And then the Gemara in Yuma concludes, and the Rambam quotes it as well. The Pasuk says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says about such a person, such a person whose embodiment of Torah commands respect, as in that story, the respect that the Russian had, that the Moshe turned against the Jew and forced the Jew to pay. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that Avdi Ata, you are genuinely my Eved, my servant, Yisrael, Asher Becha Esfoya. Yisrael, a Jew, in whom I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, take glory. That I glorify myself, that I have such a person as part of my chosen nation. Such a person is my Eved.
I'm in the shower.